Sri Shuku Vacha Ta Evam Shamsato Dharmam Vachaputyur Achetasaha Naiva Grinanta Sambranta Palayana Paranipa. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, Vritrasura, the commander-in-chief of the demons, advises lieutenants in the principles of religion, but the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. A very stunning section of Srimad Bhagavatam is the history of Vritrasura. The paradox. Indra, the lord of the heavenly planets, apparently is victorious, but actually he's the loser. Because Vritrasura, upon being killed by Indra, will go back to Godhead. And Indra gets to remain bound to the material world, seeking material enjoyment in the heavenly planets. The next chapter is entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death. How can death be glorious? Everyone wants to avoid death. And in fear of death, actually you seek to enjoy material life unrestrictedly, because unconsciously, subconsciously, you know death is coming. So there's pressure. You've got to get everything out of life that you can right now. But that's a demoniac way of looking at life. The civilized way of looking at life is that there is a next life, and my next life depends on what I do in this life. This life has depended on what I did in my past life. That's civilization. Even if you're not intent on going back to Godhead, at least in civilized life, you're intent to get a higher station in your next life. But that no one cares about today. Higher station in life means, what are we going to do next weekend? That's as far as the advanced planning goes. If we have a wonderful time next weekend and get totally blasted and wasted, wind up with a partner who we never knew before and won't know afterwards, what a way to go. What a life. So, you need a bit of civilization to understand this section of Bhagavatam. Because you might be thinking, but Vritrasura dies, and Indra lives. Indra lives in opulence, a beautiful wife, the Lord of Heaven. And Vritrasura, he's killed. Let's look at the situation now. The demons are fleeing. They're armies are being decimated by the demigods. They're running away. As you know, for warriors, Kshatriyas, to run away from a battlefield is considered the topmost disgrace. If you come home from the battlefield with a wound in the back, your whole family practically rejects you. And your own wife calls you a coward. Kshatriyas should always have wounds in the front. So, Vritrasura is, at the end of the previous chapter, he's saying, everyone has to die. There's no way of escaping death. Therefore, since death is inevitable, why not die in a glorious way? Gain promotion to the higher planets. He's trying to instruct these demons who are fleeing in religious principles. And Vritrasura, because he's a devotee, he has to give the Siddhanta. He concludes his exhorting the demons to turn around and fight. He says, there are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. You can die after performing mystic yoga, bhakti yoga, especially, absorbed in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Or you can die on the battlefield, leading the army, never showing your back. These are the two recommended deaths in Shastra. We are aiming, of course, to die fully absorbed in Krishna. Fully absorbed in Krishna means absorbed in Krishna's service. What you're doing now is practice for death. Actually, you'll find out later that Vritrasura was totally absorbed in thinking of Krishna at the time of death, that he actually didn't even feel the pain of his being separated from the body. And that's a general situation available for all devotees. You can be so absorbed in Krishna's service and thinking of Krishna that you don't feel the pain of being separated from your body. You're just, the body does its thing and you're being transferred to the spiritual world. Of course, you can't see that from the outside with external vision. If a devotee fixed in thinking of Krishna is leaving his or her body, you can't see from the outside. It just looks like death to you. You can't see, just like Dhruva, when Dhruva was being transferred to the spiritual world. He was boarding the Vaikuntha aircraft, and death personified came. You can't imagine how fearful death personified looks like. Everyone's afraid of death. Literally, when death personified shows up, you're so frightened that you actually just are shocked out of your body. Yes, death personified literally scares the life out of you. Otherwise you won't go because you're so attached to the body. But when death personified showed up for Dhruva, he just stepped on its head and used death personified as a stepping stone to board the Vaikuntha aircraft. Because death personified was offering obeisances to Dhruva, so Dhruva just stepped on his head and boarded the aircraft. So how are you going to see all that with external vision? The question is, what can you see with external vision? Think about it. What can you really see about life with external vision? Our whole Krishna consciousness movement is based on internal vision. That's not a mythology. That's not some kind of religious hallucination. To see everything related to Krishna is factual. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, for one who sees me in everything and everything in me, I never lost to him, he's never lost to me. This is love, the love vision, seeing everything connected to Krishna. And then Krishna will always want to be connected to you. We need to train our vision to look at life in a different way. That training is essential for every devotee. Newcomers, that means you're accepting training. Older devotee, that means you should be able to give training to change someone's vision, how they're seeing things. How they're seeing the goal of their life, how they're seeing the way they should live their life, how they're seeing their family, how they're seeing their marriage, how they're seeing their money. Everything changes in connection with Krishna. Your vision changes. You see things differently. And to maintain that divine vision, you need association of enthusiastic, dedicated devotees. In their association, in their sangha, you'll continue to see differently. Without their association, your old vision will creep back in. You're living in a world which has demoniac vision. A vision that just looks for opportunities for instant sense gratification and security through money. Identification with the flesh, at best with the mind. That's what kind of society you're living in. So, to avoid That kind of vision requires proper association. Don't ever take it for granted. All right, I've associated with devotees before, and I've chanted before, and I've read before, so I've got it all internalized now, so I can just kind of go on like everyone else in this world. I'll have Krishna in my heart. No, you'll be corroded, worn down, dissolved, and absorbed by material existence. Or you may say, well, it won't be that bad. I'll still believe in Krishna. I'll still be a vegetarian, and I'll still say Hari Bol when I pass by devotees on the street. But what about your mission in life to go back to Godhead? What kind of death are you going to have? Oh, well, that'll be so far away. No, it is very close. Fourth canon describes how death is like a hunter that's stalking everyone. The hunter is there. He's hiding behind a tree with his bow and arrow, with his rifle, and just waiting for the deer to come. So it's not a question of, will it happen and it'll be a long time in the future. No, the hunter is there in the forest behind the tree, stalking you. I know it's an uncomfortable feeling to think that death is stalking you. You want to feel free, right? Like you have so many options and a wonderful life of a few years ahead. Right? Doesn't matter that it's just a few years, as long as it's, as long as it's going to be wonderful for a few years, right? I think, Michael Jackson had a wonderful life for a few years. But there's anxiety even in dealing with his death. They've got a $250,000 casket for him. And now the family's in anxiety. Where are we going to bury that $250,000 casket? U.S. dollars. It's a $500,000 Kiwi dollars, almost. So their anxiety. If we bury it in an unprotected place, grave robbers will come. Dig up the casket, steal it. This is the nature of material existence. It's anxiety, whatever you do. You want to show off your wealth? Get the $250,000 US casket, and then you're still in anxiety. So they're going to bury him twice. Because they have to find the safest location for the dead body in the $250,000 US casket. This goes on and on and on. So please think of this example from the fourth canto. The hunter is there in the forest, taking aim. It's just the hunter knows it's a matter of time before I get the deer. But we think, I'm free. There's money to be made. Sense gratification to be had, or we're living under the gun. Vritrasura, he knows that. He knows that Indra is destined to kill him because it's the desire of the Supreme Lord. It's not simply material destiny. Vritrasura knows the plan, Krishna's plan. So he actually, Vritrasura's telling Indra, let's get it on, come on, kill me. I'm going to go back to Godhead. You can stay and rot in the material world. Vritrasura is doing his duty up until the moment of his death. He's exhorting his fellow demons, don't run away, turn and fight. Do things according to Dharma. It's their occupational duty to stand and fight as Kshatriyas. So Vritrasura is exhorting his fellow demons to do things in the right way, and they'll be the best result. But what's the result? As you read here, the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. We don't want to be in such a situation in which we're so distraught and so materially affected, we can't accept proper guidance. We can't accept Krishna's instructions. We can't accept the instructions of our spiritual master. So we're always watching our state of mind and keeping it receptive and clear. You see, in order to survive material existence, you need to have an intelligence that deliberates. Bhagavatam will develop that kind of intelligence in you, in which you're always thinking before you act. You're weighing. Because in this world, the material energy will always make presentations to you. Always project on your screen. Go for this. Go for that. Do you remember this? Do you remember that? And we'll package it so nicely and attractively. How do you survive that? First of all, you're engaged in devotional service. So you always have something better to do. Secondly, deliberative intelligence. Your intelligence is strong by Srimad Bhagavatam. It analyzes, it weighs, it meditates on the situation. It analyzes the proposal of Maya, weighs it. And when you do that with deliberative intelligence, gained from Srimad Bhagavatam, you always see through the fog. Krishna consciousness is for intelligent persons, but that doesn't mean mundane intelligence. It means intelligence that has been gifted by Srimad Bhagavatam. You can think clearly, you can weigh up the consequences. You can plot a course for your life. Just like Vritrasura, he's a demon. Actually, he's the greatest devotee in the garb of a demon. But he knows, my course is plotted. I'm going back to Godhead. Therefore, I'll act properly. I'll do my duty until the time of death. I'm the leader of the demoniac soldiers. We're going to fight properly. And if we die, we'll die properly. We'll have a glorious death. But while he's still alive, he's fighting with all his might. That's his occupation. His demoniac soldiers, however, they can't listen. They're overwhelmed by fear. We have to watch it in our life when we become overwhelmed by fear, by lust, by envy, by greed, by pride. You can't hear then. It's very difficult. That's why, once again, good association and guidance is required to deal with you when you get into one of those states. You're about to make a hasty decision. You're about to do something that you'll immensely regret later. Often, politicians, when they get caught in some scandal, adultery, they lament, oh, if I could just take back those moments in my life. They ruin, you know, their whole, in some countries anyway, I don't know. Probably not New Zealand, but in some countries, you know, if a politician, you know, gets caught in an adulterous situation, then, you know, he gets a severe reaction. And they always say, oh, if I could just take those moments back. I wasn't thinking. If I could just take those moments back. Now my whole career is ruined. We should be on the lookout for situations in which we're overwhelmed by unfavorable mental states. Don't bathe in those kind of states. Don't just wallow in it. You want to get out. And the last thing you want to do is make a decision in those states. It's the last thing you want to do. The problem is, though, you can't just bite your tongue and bind yourself up with a rope. That's not going to work. You've got to deal with the situation positively. That means you need fortification from good association and You need to be steered by good guidance. Nature of this world is just wave after wave of agitation and disturbance. Sometimes it will happen. Yes, sometimes it will happen to devotees on the path back to Godhead that they'll be kind of really blown a bit by the gale winds of material desires, material situations. Even against your best intentions, it can happen. So you have to know what to do in advance. That advance preparation means deliberative intelligence formed in the association of devotees. That will save you every time. So you have to know how to prepare yourself. You can't wait until the winds blow. You have to have advanced planning for the hurricane. You don't have hurricanes here. You have cyclones sometimes. And often the cyclones come to me.
There was one in Kai Tai just a week ago.
Yes. So, earthquakes. Advanced preparation. Fortify the intelligence. A weak devotee means no fortified intelligence. Therefore, whatever the mind comes up with, the devotee becomes affected. What are some other situations in which persons in the Bhagavatam have said, they've admitted, we're overwhelmed by fear? Even though we know we should do one thing, we can't. We're affected. We were speaking last night about the Yajnapatnis, the wives of the ritualistic brahmanas. This is, as I said last night, this is the female superiority chapter of the Bhagavatam. So, we discussed last night how the brahmanas, when they realized that their wives were the advanced devotees, and that the brahmana men had just blown the situation completely. And they were cursing themselves. The hell with our brahmana status, the hell with our rituals, the hell with all our austerities we've done. We've missed the point. They tried to imply that Krishna had tricked them. Well, actually, he was coming, you know, he's come to this world disguised as a cowherd boy, so therefore it was kind of a trick, so it wasn't completely our fault, but no. And they admitted, finally, our wives are our gurus. They are dear to Krishna. We surrender to our wives. Yes, that's there in Bhagavatam. Also, in the Leela with Kaliya, the wives, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya, they actually saved their husband. At first, they were telling Krishna, while Krishna was punishing Kaliya through his dancing, the wives, they said, our husband deserves it. He deserves getting smashed like this. He's been envious. He's been violent. He deserves to be smashed. But just see how he's being smashed in such a wonderful way. He's getting the dust of Krishna's feet on his head. That's such the rarest position. Then they saw. Wait a minute. By Krishna's dancing on his head, He's starting to repent. His consciousness is becoming uplifted. Then they reverse their prayer. Krishna, Krishna, our husband's becoming a Vaishnava. Save him, please, save him. So in this way, these ladies were actually, you could say, determining the fate of their husband. You can study their prayers, the prayers of the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya. In the case of the Yajnapatnis, the wives of the Brahmanas, their husbands, who were super first-class ritualistic Karmakanda brahmanas, fully focused on going to the heavenly planets, doing every sacrificial ritual properly. They had performed austerities, they had studied the Vedas, especially the flowery words of the Vedas, as Krishna said. Missing the whole point of the Vedas, to go back to God here. They said, our wives are our gurus. They know, we don't know. We have missed the opportunity to serve Krishna and Balaram. So then, they decided, let's go see Krishna now in the forest. We'll make amends. Then what happened? As they were preparing to go see Krishna, they realized, actually, some spies may tell King Kamsa that we're going to see Krishna, and our situation will become very threatened. Actually, we better not go. We're afraid of Kamsa. Someone will report us to Kamsa that we're going to see Krishna. So they didn't go. What happened, though, when the cowherd boys came and made the presentation to the wives of the brahmanas? After they got themselves out of trance, as we described last night, hearing the name Krishna and Balaram, and then hearing they're nearby, and then hearing they're hungry, they immediately ran to Krishna with no concern for safety, no concern for any external impediments. They know this is the goal of the Vedas. You can't bring up the Vedas and say you can't go to the goal of the Vedas. They ran immediately. Whereas the husband, even after realizing their great mistake, still couldn't bring themselves to go to Krishna because they were afraid. Because perhaps you could say with their male rational intelligence and logical analysis. They calculated, well, this would actually be dangerous. We could be reported to Kamsa, and then our family situation would be threatened. Whereas the ladies never calculated at all. They just reacted with bhakti hearts. That is the superior position, the bhakti heart. The men, the brahmana men, obviously they weren't purified of material desires. Therefore, those desires became an impediment. They couldn't run off to see Krishna. So in this way, the ladies were superior. And the men admitted it. And even after admitting it, the men still couldn't get themselves together. Their intelligence was affected by fear. Whereas the ladies' intelligence was not affected. They were beyond mind and intelligence. Just hearing the name Krishna and Balaram, they went into samadhi almost. And then began, as we described last night, and when they heard Krishna and Balaram are hungry, while they were almost in samadhi, they began to berate themselves. What are we doing in samadhi? What are we doing in this ecstatic trance? Krishna and Balaram are hungry. That's pure devotion. Not, I want to be happy. Isn't this trance so delightful? Krishna's giving us happiness. Isn't that great? No, they're simply thinking of Krishna's happiness. What's the use of this ecstatic trance when Krishna's hungry? That is pure devotion. How are you going to understand that? It'll be the gift of engaging in devotional service with a sincere, selfless motivation. You'll be able to understand, indeed, how the Yajna Patnis could think like that. They're tasting a definitive reality. Krishna's pleasure is not imaginary. It's not like you go around imagining, okay, we have to act for Krishna's pleasure. I wonder what that could be like. It is the supreme reality. So just think how fear prevented the brahmana men from following their intention to go to the forest to see Krishna. This is how severe bodily attachment is. Identification with the material world. Who else had their intelligence affected by externals so they couldn't act properly? Prahlad Maharaj's mother. Her husband was off fighting the demigods in a dangerous situation. And so Narada Muni, knowing that Prahlad was in the womb of his mother, he gave the mother, an unborn child, shelter. And Narada Muni, knowing Prahlad is there in the womb, began to narrate Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Dharma, the instructions of how to attain and please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prahlad heard everything, even though in the womb. But because his mother was in so much anxiety about her husband, oh, where is he? When is he coming back? She couldn't remember anything Narada said. So you see, it's really not the material situation that matters. Prahlad was in the womb. It's all about the spiritual advancement. Prahlad heard and remembered everything, and therefore as a 5-year-old boy or so, he could speak to his schoolmates exactly what Narada Muni had said. The mother forgot due to material anxiety caused by material attachment. She was in a distraught state of mind. Narada Muni's right there talking Bhagavad Dharma, and she couldn't retain it. Let that be a lesson, that you have to arrange your life so that you can hear properly. That is your responsibility. You have to manage your lifestyle so that you can hear properly. You don't do that, don't expect that disturbing situation comes along in life and all of a sudden, okay, yeah, let's hear. It generally doesn't work like that because you haven't prepared yourself. You haven't prepared yourself for life in this world. You left yourself wide open and lax and vulnerable. Everyone hates to be vulnerable. You know that feeling in which you feel totally unprotected in a dangerous situation. Vulnerable to disease, vulnerable to physical attack, vulnerable to emotional assault or whatever. You hate that feeling. But why should we live a life in which we're vulnerable to material disturbance in such a way that even if someone will come, some devotee will come, some transcendental sound vibration will come and give the right answer, the right instruction, we're in such a disturbed state of mind, we can't pay attention, we can't accept it. That's hellish. So you have, it is your responsibility to arrange your life in advance, knowing those moments will come because you're in the material world. It's like everyone knows, rainstorms will come. We were speaking with Achyuta Baba, telling her, you know, you've got to be prepared for the weather here. Rain will come. The rain can be comparatively cold sometimes. Depending on where you're from, you may call the rain cold. Oh, in Cairns, the rain is warm. Well, here you have to be prepared for rain that's not warm. That's the way of the weather. Similarly, in material existence, you have to be prepared for disturbances. The nature of the material world is what? Kunta, anxiety. And here you're going to just pretend you're living in La La Land. Everything will be fine. We'll finger our beads inattentively from one day to the other. We have the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam on our bookshelf. No, you have to be prepared in a world of anxiety. That means developing deliberative intelligence in good association. If you don't do that, it'll be very difficult for you to accept good advice when a disturbance comes, because your mind will be so filled with fear, anger, greed, envy. Prepare in advance for the cyclone of material existence. You can be sure it's going to come. Who else couldn't hear besides Prahlad Maharaj's mother? Dhruva Maharaj. His mother told him, look, I can't do much for you. I'm not the favorite wife of your father. In fact, I'm a bit of an outcast. But I know someone who's more affectionate than millions of mothers. Dhruva said, who's that? Vishnu. He can give you whatever you want. He can give you the greatest kingdom that you want. Dhruva said, where do you find Vishnu? Dhruva's just a 5-year-old boy. You have any 5-year-old kids here? Yeah. He's 5?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I have to have a kingdom greater than anyone who's ever had in history. I tried to climb on my father's lap, but because I was born from the non-favorite wife. You only have one, right? Because I was born from the non-favorite wife, my father pushed me away. Can you imagine how a little boy like that would feel? His own father pushes him off, won't let him climb on the lap. And then his favorite wife comes along, just this little 5-year-old boy, and says, look, you were born from the wrong womb. Cruel. There's only one solution. You perform severe austerities, and then in your next life, you might be fortunate enough to take birth in my womb. Dhruva's a Kshatriya boy, so the insult was unbearable for him. He ran crying to his mother. And his mother had to admit her helplessness. What can I do? I'm out of favor. I'm still supported by your father, but in terms of affection, he's got someone else, the other wife is the apple of his eye. So she told Dhruva, she pointed Dhruva in the direction of Vishnu. Vishnu can give you whatever you want. So just think, this 5-year-old boy, immediately gone to the forest. Where's Vishnu? I gotta find him. That kind of determination is there in Krishna consciousness. We've got to find that kind of determination. We just get a little drop of that determination. How glorious our life will be in Krishna's service. In the forest, Dhruva met Narada Muni, who was testing Dhruva's determination and also giving Dhruva good instruction. It wasn't just entrapment kind of test. Let's see how serious you are. But also Narada was speaking correct instruction. He said to Dhruva, what's the big deal, you know, a few insults. Even in the material world, they have this expression, sticks and stones may break my bones, but what?
Names will never hurt.
Names will never harm me. So in effect, Narada Muni told that to Dhruva. Of course, Narada knows that also the sticks and stones don't harm you. But at least he said, the insults, they don't harm you. Who cares? Someone may babble this, babble that, big deal. Don't be so attached. And what was Dhruva's reaction? He admitted, you're telling me the right thing, but my mind is so disturbed, I can't accept it. And what do you expect? You know, I'm a Kshatriya boy. I can't handle dishonor. I can't handle insult. So you've got to help me attain my goal of having a better kingdom than anyone in my family. I'll show them. Narada was amazed. Wow, these Kshatriyas are really hung up. But Narada used Dhruva's hang-up to get him back to Godhead. That is the expertise of Krishna's devotee. Okay, people are hung up. Let's see how to use what they're hung up about. Let's see if it can get them closer to Krishna. That's the mercy of a devotee. So Dhruva admitted, you're right, but I can't accept it. I can't hear it. I can't act on it, even though I know you're right. Of course, later, Dhruva will lament when he attains the perfection of seeing Vishnu. He's going to lament, what a fool I was. And that lamentation is not like, well, since I've seen Vishnu, I'm going to get whatever I want from Vishnu. Therefore, yeah, I'll just make some prayers of lamentation. It sounds pretty good, huh? Oh, I'm sorry, what a fool I was. But actually, I got the kingdom. I'll just, you know, go through the motions of being a humble Vaishnava. Oh, I'm so fallen. I had material desires. No, he's actually feeling that way. What a fool. Swamin Pitata Sri Vadam Nayate. Oh, Lord, I have no more. I don't want anything material. His lamentation was to the bone, shall we say, acute. It's very nice to study Dhruva's lamentation. He's sincerely condemning himself. You might think, oh, well, after he saw Vishnu, after Vishnu touched his conch shell to his head, well, of course he was going to say so many things, you know. That's part of the bhakti way. You talk platitudes like that, you know, and it's like, one of the Guru Kuli boys used to call it a Kijai Bliss Boy talk. You know, rah rah, you know. Oh, I had material desires, what a fool I was. This is that, you know, it's the cool thing to say. No, he meant it. You have to study those prayers to understand he really meant it. You're probably thinking, hey, he sees Vishnu. He's going to get his kingdom. It's all happening. Yeah, I would. If it happened to me, I would say a few words of regret. Yuck. My Lord, I'm sorry I had the wrong desires, but how about that kingdom? Right? For the sake of the Vaishnavs, you know, you'd express some lamentation. Yeah. You know, I shouldn't have asked for those things, even though now I'm getting it. No, he sincerely means it. His lamentation is so profound that Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, be very careful what you desire from the Lord, otherwise you'll have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. And he really means it too, even though we're thinking, well, I wouldn't mind lamenting like Dhruva Maharaj. You get what he gets, you know, get your own planet, you know. And the Vaishnava world is different, just like Vritrasura. It's a different world. He's ready. Indra, kill me. I'm ready to go back to Godhead. You'll stay here in the material world and rot in your heavenly planet enjoyment. I'll go to Vaikuntha. Come on, kill me. He has to remind Indra, this is the plan of the Lord. You're supposed to win. I'm a demon. You're supposed to kill me. So let me remind you of what the Lord wants. Indra's quite puzzled. Wait a minute. He's a demon, and he's instructing me in the highest religious principles. Vritrasura, by the will of the Lord, is to be killed by Indra's thunderbolt. But naturally, as a Kshatriya, Vritrasura is going to fight his best, even though he knows what the outcome is. And he beats. At one point, he beats Indra so severely that Indra drops the thunderbolt, which is going to kill Vritrasura. And Vritrasura has to encourage Indra. Come on, pick it up. Pick up your weapon. You're going to kill me. Pick it up. Come on, you can do it. Such determination and freedom from the bodily conception of life. Vritrasura had more faith in the plan of the Lord than Indra did. Indra was embarrassed. In these circumstances, before the death of Vritrasura, the demoniac commanders are fleeing the battlefield. They're so disturbed by fear, they couldn't accept Vritrasura's words. In the next verse, we see that the demigods taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attack the army of the demons from the rear. So there are two things here we want to focus on. Favorable opportunity presented by time. Yes, that's intelligence. You always do your duty in all circumstances, but at the same time you're alert for the favorable opportunities that time presents. Devotees are all-weather devotees. They just don't function in the sunshine of the summer. Any season, the devotee is ready for action to serve Krishna. At the same time, there's no doubt, there are some times more favorable than others. So it's kind of a double reality. You're an all-season, all-weather devotee, but you know how to take advantage, especially of favorable moments. Just like Srila Prabhupada said about himself when he was in Vrindavan at the Radha Damodar Mandir so many years. He said, "Don't think I was there just doing nothing. I was waiting for the right time to come." The timing is something, but it doesn't mean your whole service to Krishna is put on the shelf because you may think the time is not favorable. No, you're always pushing forward, but at the same time you know how to take advantage of favorable moments. A devotee is the greatest opportunist. When I was in the USA in April and May, I was explaining to devotees, this is a favorable time. Americans are having their sense gratification threatened. They become different creatures in those situations. When their sense gratification is threatened, they start to listen. So it's party time for the preachers of Krishna consciousness. People are having doubts about material existence. You can actually go and give lectures and explain material existence is faulty, and people won't think you're an extremist or a wacko. They're questioning, what's the point of economies if they just crash like this? What's the point of living in nature in such a way that you destroy nature? They're thinking deeply about these things. So it's a very favorable time for presenting Krishna consciousness. But does that mean we sit around and wait, twiddling our thumbs? Okay, Krishna, don't worry. When the favorable time comes, we'll sally forth. No, we're always pushing ahead. At the same time, we know how to take advantage of favorable winds, favorable breezes. Srila Prabhupada explained that a devotee is like an expert business person who knows how to make a profit, whether the price of rice is going up or down. An amateur business person can only make a profit when prices are going up. That means you're amateur. Expert business person means, never mind what the price is doing, up, down, you still make a profit somehow. So a devotee knows how in all seasons, all circumstances, to push ahead for Krishna. At the same time, when there are favorable circumstances, especially special moments, devotees know how to utilize that very expertly. The demigods took advantage of the favorable opportunity presented by time, but they attacked the demons from the rear. The demons are fleeing the battlefield. Religious principles for warfare mean you don't attack an enemy who's afraid, who's running for his life. But the demigods, they didn't care. They were cutting down the demoniac soldiers from the rear. So Vritrasura, as his verse describes, began to rebuke the demigods. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcefully rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. We'll read the translation. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers, exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. We'll hear from Srila Prabhupada's purport. Vritrasura rebuked both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers because the demons were running in fear of their lives and the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. Now just think how civilized human beings wage war these days. You can just look at the way that recent conflicts, military conflicts, have been conducted in the Balkans, Chechnya. Who are the first persons to catch it? The women and children. And this is civilization. Vritrasura insulted the demoniac soldiers by comparing them to the stool of their mothers. I'm sure by now you're used to the graphic examples of Bhagavatam. These vivid images to stick in your mind. Anyway, just in case you missed the point, Prabhupada goes on to elaborate. Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother. And Vritrasura said there's no difference between them. Those of you who are not mothers, if you watch a documentary about childbirth, you see the child actually drops just like that. It's squeezed out. Just like stool is being passed. So that's what the Bhagavatam's saying. If it's a material birth and a child who's going to perform material activities, what's the difference? Vritrasura, he's pointing that out. He insulted his own demoniac mates by saying, "You're just stool coming from your mother's." Both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother. And furthermore, just so you remember the point, the Prabhupada goes on. A similar comparison was given by Tulsidas, who commented that a sun and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son, but urine. So all you potential fathers, please remember that. Bob becomes very practical. Similarly, Chanaka Pandit also says, Kurta putrena jatena yona vidvan nadharmaka kanena chakshusha kimba chakshu pidaiva kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye, which simply gives pain but cannot help one to see. Do we want to have taken birth uselessly and to be evaluated that we've come from the bodies of our mothers exactly like stool? How do you live a glorious life in this age of Kali? There's no glory in the age of Kali. There's not even material or Vedic glory, like dying like a Kshatriya, going to the heavenly planets. As Shukadev Goswami told Pritchett Maharaj, Asti heko mahan gunah. There's only one good thing. There's only one glory in the age of Kali. Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Vijay. Simply by chanting Hare Krishna, you can attain the perfection of life. That's the only glory. If you're looking for some other glory, just forget it. It's not there. Your glory in life is defined on your attachment to chanting Hare Krishna in japa and kirtan. That's the only good thing. I know for some of you this may sound stark, a stark assessment. But it's a wonderful assessment. It's pointing out that in the dense darkness of this age, you have the easiest method for going back to Godhead. And we're so dull about it because we think, oh, actually, it can't be that simple. Even you hear sometimes devotees say, there's got to be more to it than just chanting Hare Krishna. It's not so simple, Prabhu. Actually, it is that simple. Because we don't take to that simplicity, therefore, we have so many supportive activities to keep us buttressed till we get to the point of understanding the simple solution of chanting Hare Krishna. If we're Srila Prabhupada said once, I've invented all these ISKCON activities just so that you come to the point of relying on the Hare Krishna mantra. The sooner you realize everything comes down to the chanting of the holy name, individually and congregationally, the sooner your life has its access to the only glorious thing in this age. Finally, we should note that with the so-called victory of Indra and the so-called death of Vritrasura, you see Krishna reciprocating with different grades of devotees. Indra got what he wanted. He wanted his opulence, his heavenly planet reign to continue. He got that. Vritrasura got what he wanted. He wanted to go back to Godhead. So this is Krishna dealing with different types of devotees according to their level. So what level do you want to be on? By reading these chapters about Vritrasura, your intelligence will become purified. You'll develop genuine spiritual aspirations simply to give Krishna pleasure.